Wonderful. We are set and ready to roll. Thank you, Jed, for saying hello informally to the group. And as we formally get rolling, we're right at the top of the hour. It is a delight to have all of you here for our Media Bids Power Hour, our educational program for this month. These are programs that we've been hosting going all the way back to 1995. Our program is 193 deep, and Jed and myself together have been working on programs just like this since 2006. We have immense respect for your time. We will start on time at the top of the hour. We will end on time. A couple of quick tips and suggestions for our program here today. Please, as best you can, turn off anything electronic, anything that will distract you. Try to find a quiet space. Close your office door. We know some of you are sitting literally in your cars. Wherever you're going to be, wherever you are, find a quiet space and be able to work here together. The second part, the very best in adult education and learning, plus our work over almost 29,000 hours, says the more notes that you're making and taking, the more that you're going to learn. That is our goal. This is the coach approach. We want to transfer the knowledge and be able to let you have skills and resources that you can use immediately. So very simply, print the email confirmation that got you here. There are three key bullets we're going to be covering related to editorial drives, more advertising, and we encourage you to make lots of notes along the way. Also, in the next couple of days, we will have this up at the MediaBid site, so you'll be able to listen to it. We encourage you each week to maybe select one that we have done. We've done more than 50 hours. You literally could fire up every single week's sales meeting by listening to even a fourth or a half of one of these programs and be able to share that with your team and brainstorm collectively. With me is Jed. Jed is the CEO, president, founder of MediaBids, and Jed, it's always a pleasure working together. How about a hello to the group? And tell us a little bit about MediaBids and the work that you do with publications and newspapers and magazines of all kinds. Tell us what's cooking.
All right, great. Well, first I want to thank Ernest. Ernest does a great job with these teleseminars. I always learn a lot from listening to him. He has an enormous amount of experience, and so it's always a pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I am, as Ernest said, with MediaBids, and MediaBids is a print advertising marketplace. Basically, what we do is we try to sell more ads for your publication. So, you know, we have a variety of different ways that we do that, but they're all relatively straightforward, and it just is a good way for you to reach advertisers that you may not otherwise know about. We're always here, or at least almost always here. So feel free to give us a call if you have questions, or send us an email. Our contact information will be in the email that comes at the end of the teleseminar. You know, we look forward to hearing from you.
Absolutely. A joy, Jed, to be working together, and the topics, as you know, always come inspired from those who have joined our programs over the years. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. We are a business coaching and training service. We work with hundreds of publications in about 8 or 9 time zones around the world. We work by phone, by conference call, by webinar, by email, and we help our clients win everything from sales success, marketing success, web success, tied to search engine optimization. We have a recruiting division within our company. We have an investment banking group, which means we help our clients buy and sell publications and media solutions of all kinds. And lastly, we run one of the largest LinkedIn groups in the world. We have about 35,000 readers that are part of our 10 groups. If you are using LinkedIn and would like to know how to gain and build groups and make that an asset for your advertising team and for your advertisers and for your readers, please let us know. And on the other side, if you'd like to have something that creates a competitive advantage, LinkedIn is an incredible tool. We've done entire programs on the power of LinkedIn, a significant tool and a wonderful sales and marketing resource. Today, we're going to be talking about editorial drives more advertising. There are three key points that we're going to cover related to this. And, Jed, let's kick off with the first point, and let's talk about the value of our editorial packages and who cares most about editorial. And, Jed, I could hear that you are already a little feisty about the editorial side, yeah. And we haven't even said hello.
I'm not. As a former reporter, I respect the editorial.
The power of the pen, my man. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the value. And let's start to begin with USP. Our USP stands for our, and we're going to reference this as we roll through the course of our program here today. USP stands for either your unique selling proposal or your unique selling position. What it really says is what separates me from my competitors. What am I most proud of? And what parts of my publication, my website, my e-newsletter, my newspaper, my magazine, we realize we have a very diverse group of media and advertising sales professionals and leaders, but just recognize as we're talking about USP, we're looking for the things that set us apart. So it could be, for example, our distribution, or it could be our circulation, or it could be our website, or it could be a strategic alliance that we have that others don't have. It could even be access to a particular industry show that competitors don't. All of those things need to be very clearly delineated. We've done entire programs on media comparisons, side-by-side comparisons, and how we sell and how we go down this path. But we've never done an educational program, Jed, in all of these years, just focused on the editorial side. So what we're really trying to do here is say, listen, there are many ways to set yourself apart. Today we're just focusing on one of those areas. Okay, the editorial. And in part the reason that we're doing this is because sometimes it gets skipped over, sometimes it gets brushed aside, sometimes it's just a single page in a media kit that says, oh yeah, ho-hum, here's our media calendar, you know, next page. You know, we skip over the fact that there's really time, money, and resources that have to be allocated to the editorial side. And when presented correctly, it sets us absolutely apart, and we'll talk about some of those examples. Remember as well about the editorial side, Jed, when you said, listen, you know, I was a reporter, you know, I was penning that. You know, think about our editorial team. Are they full-time, internal? Are they off-site and external? Maybe they work for us and others. You know, where do we get and gain the ideas for the things that we're going to include on the editorial side? Because in order to have something, a publication that is engaging, or a website, or an e-newsletter, that content drives that engagement, and that engagement keeps people reading, keeps people paying attention, brings people to our websites, and of course, all this engagement and the stickiness of our content and editorial is what also drives everything back to the advertisers, okay? So let's agree, and we'll talk more about that as we get later into our program, but, you know, 1 + 1, it does equal 5. You know, if we're putting the right content in front of the right readers and they're engaged, and I'll talk about some of my favorite examples, the things that most engage me as a reader, then our advertisers benefit because the right audience is reading the right information on a regular and ongoing basis. Another piece, though, as far as our editorial, what is the point of view of our editorial? Who is it, you know, who is the best and ideal audience for editorial? What is the niche or the niche or the focus we're trying to serve? What is special or unique about our editorial? You know, each of these are opportunities. For example, Jed, I've done a lot of work in the multifamily rental housing space. And there are publications that sort of speak to those who lease apartments, condominiums, rental homes. They're the leasing, the salespeople. Then you've got other publications that are written for sort of everybody. You know, it tells you about industry conferences and industry trends and technology. And then you've got those that just focus on finance and capital. Then you've got those that just focus on executive leadership. So when I spread out the 8 or 10 publications that I read for this sector, Jed, I can literally call out the brand for each of them. This one, lower tier. This one, a little popcorn-y. This one, pretty meaty. Wow, this one, I'm over my head. You know, I don't know much about this, you know, capital side, but let me keep reading. Maybe I'll figure out a little more or learn a little bit more. You know, and so I say that, Jed, to you and to all of those who are participating in our program today, because every one of the readers of your publication, whether you're a free publication, whether you're controlled CERC, whether you're paid CERC, it doesn't matter. Each of you have a brand, and that brand is what's seen and thought about through the eyes of the readers. Jed, your comments as you kind of think about the branding and how editorial plays into that?
Yeah, I mean, it's to echo what you said. I mean, obviously, it you know, that's why people pick it up, right? I mean, they pick it up to read something that they think is going to be interesting. There's always a huge correlation between or direct correlation between publications who have content that people really want and content that maybe isn't quite as sought after. I mean, you know, and we've talked about it in other teleseminars, but one of the things that we do here very often is measure the results that are generated. And, you know, it's always interesting to see, you know, it's very difficult to kind of quantify the value of of editorial, you know. It's difficult to sort of say, you know, this magazine is more interesting than that one, you know, for a similar demographic. But it makes a huge difference. You know, we have, you know, lots of examples of, you know, just to pick on magazines for a minute, you know, of a women's magazine in Wisconsin that does very, very well in terms of response for its ads. Compare that to a women's magazine in, you know, Texas with a similar demographic and a similar circulation area. And a similar number of copies that are being distributed, and the results could be, you know, night and day. And there's really nothing else to really point to other than the you know, the editorial and how sought after it is for the readers of that magazine.
Yep, absolutely. And it's a reminder that the more engaged the readers are, whether it's in print, whether it's on the website, whether it's coming by e-newsletter, the more engaged the readers are, the longer they're going to spend at your website or reading the publication or the newspaper or magazine, whatever it might be. And the more engaged equals stickiness. And that stickiness translates into more time perusing. One of my absolute favorite, Jed, you've heard me talk about, I love Outside Magazine. I've been reading that since I was, you know, in my teens. I even knew the fact that they moved from New York to New Mexico because they wanted to more align with the outdoors and nature and those experiences. And Outside Magazine, my God, the articles. I mean, I'm just picturing myself, you know, kayaking through the Congo, and I'm looking at the pictures. And then I'm equally engaged because the advertisers are also meshing up with exactly me as that audience. It's like I devour the pages, and then I pour through the ads just as much. And I could talk about, you know, my tennis magazine the same way, my running magazine the same way, ski magazine. I mean, it just goes on and on. The things that I read, you know, and that I'm subconsciously thinking about it as I'm thinking about that editorial, so, you know, that translates into the right editorial, to the right reader, to the right ads. But how we convey that back to our advertisers and how we also promote that to the readers is part of our job. It's part of what today is all about, as a reminder that our editorial has a compelling story, but only we can shout from the highest mountain. If not, we're whispering in the woods, and no one gets it. And we're not giving ourselves the opportunity to set ourselves apart in this area, much like we've done, Jed, entire programs on the power of distribution and circulation, or the power of our website because it's so well optimized and it's getting such reach and visibility, or the power of some strategic alliances that we have, or exclusivity. I mean, all of those things, we spend so much time thinking about every area of our business, but editorial often gets the short stick. It often gets breezed over. It's just expected. And what we're really asking you to do is pause and go, wow, who is on my team? Who are those writers? What are their credentials? What have we been awarded? You know, how have we been recognized? Wow, you know, this article got, you know, spooled out to the Wall Street Journal. Whoa, that's a big deal. Oh, it's up on Yahoo News. I mean, you know, what's happening to our content? How is it being moved around? As we all know, in the click of a retweet or the click of a forward or a send or a blog or a post, things get shifted and moved along. I know, Jed, in our own world, I go out across a pipe that is 12 million deep in my sector. 12 million deep, Jed. I'm still in the publication world. All right, where I began all the way back in the 80s, and I take that pipe every single day and feed it the very best news and news stories in my sector. So if you're writing in my sector, and I take that out across my audience every single day this next year, 12 million people are going to see your website. They're going to see your take. They're going to see your spin on that. So the power of content is that it moves fast and it moves far, but only we can sell and tell that story if we put a spotlight on it.
You can even take it a step further. And you know, probably not for the people who are on this call, but, you know, I've talked to a lot of newspaper and magazine salespeople who, frankly, don't even read their publication. You know, they're it's so far the editorial is so far removed from them at times that they you know they don't even make a point of reading what they're selling, which is a real mistake.
Yep, absolutely. We want to know our information cold. We want to know who's writing it. We want to know what their point of view is. We want to know why they interviewed these two companies for the interview, not these two, why this trend is hotter than that, because these all give us clues as to what's happening in the sector, okay? And just related to that, we have a number of questions that have already come in prior to our program. If you have additional questions throughout the course of our program here today, just send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com or just hit a reply to the confirmation that actually got you here. One more quick point here before we move into number two. Who cares most about the editorial? And certainly the readers do, okay? For those of us that are, you know, focused on the advertising and the revenue side from a leadership point of view and driving our revenue, you know, let's just remember that without the readers, we have nothing to sell, okay? So, you know, the quality of the information and the timeliness, our readers care. Our advertisers care. Our advertisers should be turning to our publication, our e-newsletter, our website, and they should be getting the very latest, greatest, and best. And just like each of you and all of you inspire Jed and I every month to put on these kinds of programs, the same thing should be happening. If you're close enough to your niche, industry, sector, and space, then you should be inspired by the kinds of topics that you want to be covering. But on the other side, we should be equally pushed by our advertisers who are asking tough questions about the niche, the sector, the industry. What's actually happening on that side of the house? What's pressing in their world? What are the really big deals that are going on there? All right. What questions need to be asked that are not being asked? Remember, as a publication, always, you know, think about yourself as being Switzerland. You're a neutral resource. You can go out and survey 27 of the biggest competitors in the market space and kick out a survey report, a linear graph, a chart, an analysis that's never been done because you can cloak anonymously behind the scenes all the data gathering. You can insert some quotes related to a couple of the leaders, but you're able to produce really nice quality information when you go out into a sector and space and start talking about what are the competitive pressures you're feeling from overseas, who's buying right and who's not, what's happening to the margins, what's happening with the web and how that's impacting, what is the real reality about the way your customers buy, and what is the timeline that it takes. All of those questions, you know, who'd have thunk it, who really wants to know, can be asked and answered by your editorial team. Also remember, though, that your advertising sales team should be feeding that back. Jed, in my early 80s, I was in Southern California, and one of the things that we learned was that competitors were doing a lot of special offers, incentives, couponing, and so forth, and everybody kind of wanted to know what everybody was doing, but nobody would tell anybody. Well, we went out and did a survey, cloaked all the information, and began to produce it every 30 days. It was the most sought-after document. Then we took it out to the industry and began to publish it so that people had a neutral source. We were Switzerland. They could trust us, and they knew that we would keep that confidential, but then they wanted to read the results on the other side so that they could stay current with what was actually happening. They were just eaten out of our hands, and we were on the other side selling the advertising, and it was like the advertising was the obvious, because nobody knew more about the space and sector than us because we were pulling in the data, sharing it with them, and then scooping up the advertising on the backside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's yeah? It's a tricky balance, though, right? Because you know, a lot of advertisers' first impressions or first suggestions on the editorial that should be written about oftentimes can be self-serving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't do the readers any good, and ultimately not the publication. So how do you balance that, or do you even try, or do you just try to keep it more generic?
Yeah, you know, it's a great point, and we had more than a dozen questions just related to, you know, that topic all by itself, and you know, each publication will have it sort of define its own Chinese wall, so to speak, you know, what the wall is between editorial and advertising and how that's defined. And frankly, there are some publications where it's rock solid, this is how we roll, nothing crosses over. But in the end, if you're going to go out and do an industry survey or an industry editorial, you still need to talk to the leaders. So some with some of our clients, it's a rotation that we may recognize there's 10 key companies that are all going to speak about or want to speak about a particular topic. We might select three this year, three for next year, and three the following, and they know that we're going to reach out to them as industry sources. But if you do cross the line onto the other side and make it so advertorial, okay, then you move into a space that you've so commercialized it, you've lost the editorial integrity. Does that make sense from your writing and writer's point of view?
Yeah, definitely. It's consistently difficult to sort of find the right balance. And I think that the fact that it's so difficult to find, right, makes a problem for a couple reasons. It's a problem because if the advertising staff pushes too hard, then you end up with stories that no one wants to read. If the editorial staff is too resistant, then you end up missing stories that have to do with advertisers, that are, pitched by advertisers, or at least have something to do with advertisers, which in some cases can be good stories. The only thing they have going against them is that they're an advertiser.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's a general balance. I mean, so I play a very high level of tennis, nationally ranked up until a couple of years ago. I'm not a youngster, but I still play with the 20-somethings who, barely out of college. I mean, very competitive, and I can tell you my string tension down to a pound, whether it's right, wrong, or literally it looks brand new, and I'm cutting the strings out saying restring again. So if I open up Tennis Magazine, and they're talking about string research, they have to be talking to Babolat, who makes the best strings in the world. And it's actually Babolat that's going to be driving that research to let me know as a reader what they've learned about string tension, what they're going to be doing with some of the latest string, how it plays better or more resilient, or how it plays softer, or how you get more power or less control. It has to come from Babolat, who's driving the research. So how do you write an article about, string tension or string research or string durability without folding in those who know it the best, are doing the research and providing the information? So there comes in that gentle balance, because if I'm reading, issue after issue about strings for my tennis rackets and they're not quoting the best in the world, then I'm not really, as a reader, getting what I need either. You follow me on that?
Yep.
So... Right. So that's an important part of how we position that from a USP and who cares the most. Going also back to our editorial, our advertisers care, our competitors watch us. They're watching what we're pulling, what we're bringing in, what we're showcasing, the timeliness of the things that we're sharing, who's scooping whom in terms of that. And also our sales team cares as well. If you have your weekly sales meetings, you want your editorial team to come in, even if it's for 10 minutes. If it's by conference call, let them join for 10 and roll back in. If it's in person, let them come in for their portion, roll back out. What should they be sharing? What it is they're working on? What trends they're covering? What information that you might share as a sales leader with them? That's a very important piece. I have never run a sales meeting that I didn't bring in my editorial team, that I didn't then bring in my distribution and CERC team, that I didn't bring in my marketing. I mean, this is kind of a rolling meeting once a week where I've got sort of my core sales team, and at 1 o'clock, here's who's coming in, and at 1:10, here's who's coming in, and the other group rolls out, and at 1:20, here's who's coming in, and each of them are bringing in their portion, and they're right back out. Then later in the week, Wednesday or Thursday, then I want to work with my sales teams just on sales skills.
But would you be bringing in the editorial team to update the sales department?
It would be both ways. Sales, we want you to know the things that we're focusing on for the next issue. Anybody have input? What are you hearing? What do you know about this trend or these products or this service or this economic news? What do you know? What are you hearing? On the other side, is there anything you want to share with us? What's the drumbeat you're hearing from advertisers in terms of the sector, the industry, the niche? How is all of that working together so that the editorial team is getting interaction from the sales team from a topical point of view? Does that make sense? Jed, you still there?
Yes. No, I said yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
It was sort of a pause there.
No,
but
sorry.
I have a sore throat,
so no. My voice is a little off today.
No worries. I have some island medicine if you need it. Just let me know. Very good. So let's talk about point number two. So why does the strength of your editorial content drive more advertising sales? How does it move you head and shoulders above your direct print and web competitors? So we've been talking a little bit about the loyalty of readers. And I want all of you to think about, you've heard me talk about, for example, Outside Magazine. You've heard me talk about tennis. But it goes even further than that. You know, the loyalty of the readers goes even specifically, like when I read Tennis Magazine, Jed, it's not just tennis, but I can't wait to get to Brad Gilbert's column. All right, he played lots of tennis. He's got this real analytical mind, and he always has something that's a little offbeat. Or when I read my ski magazine, I get to the last page, and there is Warren Miller, who's been around since the 50s, filming everything that's goofy and wacky about skiing. Always has this point of view where he talks about how he camped, you know, in the parking lot of Aspen, eating his ramen noodles. Okay, but listen to me tell the stories. Why am I, you know, sharing Brad Gilbert's story? Why am I talking about Warren Miller? Because you gain a following. Thomas Friedman, I love his books. I love his columns in the New York Times. I don't care if he's writing about Swiss cheese. I read his stuff. I like his point of view. I like his take. I loved his book, The World is Flat. The same thing is happening with your readers and the loyalty they have for the content and also the writers, their point of view, their take. Okay? So recognize that that's an important part of what sets you head and shoulders, and this is the important part of the editorial content that we're talking about here. Recognize that it also translates. For those of you, it translates into renewals. For those of you that have paid subscribers and subscriptions, that transfers easy into more renewals. Tennis Magazine I've been getting for 25 years. It's not even a conversation. I'll renew that magazine the rest of my life. Outside Magazine, you already heard me say I've been getting that since I was a teenager. Inc. Magazine, since a teenager. There are things that I've been reading for that long, and that loyalty translates into stickiness, which means the advertisers are benefiting because I'm reaching out to those advertisers as resources, just like I shared the story about Babolat Strings. Also, think about the kind of content and the percent of content. Now, this is important. This is an important story. So working with a client in the Northeast a few years ago, this particular publication works in the housing and home improvement sector. And we were talking about competitors, Jed, and we're kind of working our way through and thinking about how competitors, which ones have which advertising and so forth. And they were talking about a city publication. And I said, well, that's interesting. You know, how big is their publication? How big is yours? And we're chatting. And I said, hey, hang on for a second. I said, how many pages are they actually doing about home improvement? And the team got real quiet. And they said, we don't know. I said, well, grab one. Grab one. Tell me how many pages. And they went on to say, well, you know, it's about, 10 pages. I said, well, they're 10 pages, but the publication's 200. So that's about 5% of the total magazine. Your publication is 200 pages, but 100% dedicated to home improvement. How have we showcased that to our advertisers? Long pause. Well, we never have. You know, they're a competitor, we're a competitor, we both have magazines. It's like, no, the story is wildly different. It's 10 pages that they cover home improvement, and you have 200 pages. And that became, for several years, one of the defining factors that we used, Jed, to go out and sell more and drive more revenue and push and push and push on that point until the section of City Magazine reduced from 10 to 5 and went away. What a story, huh?
Yeah, right. That's impressive.
You know, what a story. So you have to think about that. So we want all of you to think about that. Think about it in terms of competitors. You have to compare apples to apples, not that we're both newspapers, not that we're both e-newsletters, but specifically, who's covering what? Like, you might be going out to a particular sector, like mining or RVs or nursing homes or real estate, but who is really actually covering what? Are you the only one that covers technology? Or are you the only ones who really cover emerging products? What advantage do you have in that editorial? And then, of course, how do you tie it into your sales presentation? Another piece. Think about reader surveys. These should be done at least once a year, ideally twice. But what do we learn from our reader surveys about the quality of the editorial? What do we learn from our reader surveys about the kind of upcoming editorial that our readers want? How do we feed that back? Now we cross to the sales side. How do we feed that back? What if the survey comes back that more than half our readers say we don't cover enough technology? What if we begin to cover more technology and we feed that back to the advertisers and tell them, not only are we doing this, you know, because they want to know, but because they want to know, they are even more engaged in our publication, which means you gain even more visibility. Quick, easy example. Reader surveys are an important point and have to be done on a regular and ongoing basis. Now, by the way, reader surveys, we've done entire programs just about reader surveys. There's so much more you can get and gain from reader surveys, okay? But one portion of that is to ensure that you're picking up the editorial side and are able to leverage that information back onto the sales side. Jed, any comment related to doing surveys related to the editorial side from your experience or things you've seen?
No, I mean, you know, the one thing that I just wanted to ask you about was, you know, you mentioned sort of gaining a following, I imagine some people on the phone are saying, you know, thinking, you know, if I had Thomas Friedman writing for me, I would have a following too, you know, but I don't, and I have reporters who, or people or stories I buy or whatever it might be that are a lot less likely to be followed than some of the examples that you gave, and I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions, like for example, you know, long running sections or just certain types of features or stories which might be done in every issue, even if it's by a different reporter, just a way of kind of differentiating yourself without the high priced talent.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point. A couple pieces. The wonderful, you know, web today means that we can bring the very best into the fold. The whole model today of the way we post, blog, Facebook, the use of Twitter, LinkedIn. People are writing more. We're almost reverting back to the 1800s. I mean, we don't have pen or pencil in hand, but, you know, we're writing more than ever. Not letters, but we're keystroking, writing, and communicating more than ever in the history of civilization. Look at how fast, you know, pages are being indexed and websites are being updated. The amount of data is overwhelming of what, you know, is done even on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour. Look at the uploads that get done on, you know, YouTube, for example. So my piece is this. As I look at the editorial side, I want to make certain who's ever guiding my editorial team is the very best. But the ability to pull in really high-quality talent has to come from the edict that I give to he or she that's driving my editorial that says, I want the very best. I want the very freshest. I want to make certain that we're going down this path to draw in the very best of writers and hold them to a very high standard of what those expectations are. So it's sort of like being a chef. In a restaurant, Jed says we're going to bring the freshest produce, the best produce, and we're going to have the best people that are going to be preparing it under the guidance of a master chef. Okay, it doesn't mean that I may not have those that maybe don't have as much experience, and I may not be paying them as much, but I, as the master chef, will ensure that meal goes out to my expectations. Does that answer the question about sort of that, you know, the Thomas Friedman example, so to speak?
Yeah, no, it does. I think there are probably ways of doing it right that can establish that, you know, the kind of connection with the reader, that extends on. I mean, a somewhat silly example, but probably, you know, worth mentioning is something as small as, you know, the police blotter in local newspapers, right? I mean, reader surveys always show the police blotter as being one of the most read things in the newspaper. That and obituaries. And, and to some extent it's because of the content, right? It's sort of gossip and everyone kind of likes to read it. But to another extent it's also because it's sort of always there, right? And it's always something people can count on and they know where it appears in the publication, and they turn right to it. You know, so I think that there's, you know, I think that there's probably ways of doing it, you know, more along the police blotter side of things, you know, where you're, where you have a, you know, a certain piece of information that appears in the publication each time, and people can count on, as opposed to, you know, in it, or in addition to, you know, trying to get the best people. Because the problem sometimes is, as you well know, is just, you know, the best, you know, you pay for the best.
You know? Yeah, you're absolutely right, but let's also agree that, you know, Warren Miller is one of the folksier writers, and quite honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if he had a ghostwriter. He tells the stories, and someone spins the tale. I feel like I'm sitting at the fireplace, you know, having a shot at tequila as he tells his, you know, ski stories from the 50s, right?
Right.
And then you take someone like Thomas Friedman. Remember, Thomas Friedman, one day was 20-something and writing his first, you know, articles. So, you know, looking for emerging talent, one of the writers in the 12 million pipe that I go out on an annual basis, a gentleman by the name of John Wilhoit. John Wilhoit was just a gentleman in the sector that began to post some things that I thought were really interesting. I called him 2 years ago. I said, John, you're one of the best writers I've ever seen. He goes, what do you mean? I'm in the sector. No, you're one of the best writers. I said, and I'd like to tap you into my pipe. No different than Oprah did with all of her book clubs, and people go out and sell a million books. I've got a 12 million pipe. Oh, Ernest, I'm just a right listener. I said, John, would you be willing to do this? Yeah, I guess I will. John put out his first book 2 weeks ago.
Right,
and has six more to come as a result of the conversation, and his books are selling like hotcakes. He had 10,000 hits on his blog just last week.
Wow.
Okay? So you can also find and discover talent, those especially who are in the sector who have a point of view. Now, you might pause and say, what if someone's not quite the writer? Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's you can pair them with a writer. They speak it. The writer crafts it. And there could be a ghosting behind the scenes so that you have the point of view you want, even if someone's not a writer. I could have said, John, listen, I'm going to pair you up with Kate. Kate is an unbelievable writer. She's written for every major newspaper, you know, in North America. I'll pair you up with Kate, spend 30 minutes. You just tell the story, and Kate will craft it. You approve it on the back end. And so, therefore, I get the insight of somebody in the space, in the sector, and combine them with a writer, and I'm able to get the quality of information from that person's point of view. So that's another creative way to back into talent. Okay. So let's talk on the second point, a couple of other things. Remember that editorial can be used and reused and repurposed. Now, this is the power of IP, of the intellectual property, of once we have a survey, an article, you know, emerging news, what do we do with it? Well, in the wonderful world today of electronics, there's so many things. I mean, we can post it on our Facebook site. We can drop it into LinkedIn, into our group that we own, and into sector groups. We can take that and put it into our blog or other blogs. We can put it in our e-newsletter. We can tie it into a webinar program, much like you're enjoying here today, an educational component. You can present it in person in terms of industry conferences, the news and information you have. You can put it into a seminar approach and program. You can bring it one-on-one into meetings as you're meeting with those in the space and sector. So recognize that everything we create, and now back, Jed, to your point about, you know, the money side, the financial side, what I see is we don't do enough maximizing and repurposing. You can take, you know, a survey that you've just completed, you drop it into your newsletter, you invite people to come to an educational program, you speak about it at an industry event, you slide it over to another publication in the sector that's read as well, again, also by your advertisers, you drop it into a LinkedIn group. All of these opportunities give the advertisers and the readers and our prospective advertisers an opportunity to see that we are everywhere. But the reality is we took one story and we repurposed it 5 or 7 or 12 times. You follow me on that, Jed?
Right. Yep. Yeah, okay. I mean, special sections. I mean, there's a lot you can do with it.
Absolutely. And that's really a segue. And I want to weave in a couple of questions here that came in. One, the comment, Monique sent a note. She says, when I'm approaching some companies regarding editorial that they are a part of, some companies have said they do not want it to look like they bought the editorial. This has happened more than once. So, Monique, it's a great question about this piece related to editorial. It is a very delicate balance, and we have to have very clear policies related to how does the editorial work, how do we work with those that are the large advertisers who have a big say in terms of, you know, specific articles or trends or news. It's valuable to include them, but we also have to balance on the other side to say yes, but at what rate? Does that mean we're going to include them in every article? Does that mean we're going to include them in every article and not include other companies? So we have to have a very clear, defined policy. And I know you're writing from the sales point of view, but ideally you want that in writing so that you can also share that. And that should be shared with those advertisers so they understand what your policy is. We also have a question that came in from Bob and says we're building, this is on the side of an email marketing editorial. We have free registration to gain access to our editorial content. Any reason we should not be doing this? Bob, no, your model is right on track. We love that model. And the free registration means that, yes, there is a registration component that somebody does have to give their email address in order to gain access. Just a quick comment on this. It would be beneficial to be certain that before people do that, if they want or need to know what they're going to be receiving, two suggestions. One, tell them what they're going to get as a result of being willing to register. So you want to tell them exactly what they're going to receive, which is the reason why they're going to give you an email address and other pertinent information. And then the other part of that is you might even include one or two prior samples. Oh, isn't that great? Let me open this up. Let me open that. Of course I want this. Boom. I come right in and I give you my email address. So you might consider that as well. So thank you for those questions, and we'll field others as we roll along here. Let's talk about number three. Point number three we agreed to cover here today, Jed, and for those that are joining us live, what are the key steps for tucking your editorial power into your sales presentation for maximum benefit? Okay, this is the other part of what we said we're going to weave in here today, which is all about editorial drives more advertising. So it ties in, we've been talking about our USP. What makes this unique? And how are we going to define this in our sales presentation? Remember also that this also goes in your side-by-side media comparison. What sets you apart and how you're going to present it, no different than circulation, no different than your brand on the web, no different than the number of readers. Each of those things tie in to your sales presentation. Also, what's upcoming in terms of special sections, special upcoming coverage that Jed has been sharing with us. What is it that our editorial is going to bring so that advertisers know how we're staying on the cutting edge, how we're staying on the leading edge, what our particular point of view is? Are we speaking to the masses in our sector? Are we speaking just to the executives? Is it our focus primarily the marketing side? You know, what is our take and how does this set us apart? We skip over this in our sales presentations and we're not showcasing this so that a potential advertiser goes, wow, I do get this. Quick little note as well. In addition to sharing this in our sales presentations, we also need to now overlap that with the e-newsletter that goes out to our advertisers and our prospective advertisers. Last year, we did an entire program on the importance of e-newsletters to our readers and e-newsletters out to our advertisers and prospective advertisers. That's where you get an opportunity. We recommend once a month. You get 12 opportunities to remind your advertisers and to, again, retell your prospective advertisers the point of view of your editorial. Where's the win? What sets you apart? What are you most proud of? You do it 12 times there in addition to the face-to-face or by phone or by webinar presentations that you're giving. Okay? So in the same way that we believe in terms of reach, repetition, and repetitiveness, when we go out with our advertisers and advertising, we have to do the same when we're advertising what we do with our publications out to our advertisers. Another piece on the editorial. We want to talk about editorial coverage, just like Monique was asking about. What are the guidelines for the way that we're going to bring you into editorial coverage? Once again, using that Babolat and tennis example, you know, if I was sitting down with them and we were talking about their advertising campaign, I, of course, would be talking to them about the string section, what I'm going to need from them. I want to learn what it is they're going to be sharing this year, what research they're going to be covering. So when you're working with the advertisers, there's a symbiotic, not an adversarial relationship here. We want to know what their best practices are, what they've got planned for the upcoming year, what research they're going to be doing, so that we can weave that into the very best in the editorial. So this all ties into our presentation. Also, we have to be certain that we are not breezing through this in our presentation. So often, Jed, we get to that page, it says, yep, here are the 12 months, and here's what we're going to be covering, next page. No, we really want to settle in and talk about. This section is the gardening section. This is our most popular. Let me tell you why. This section is all about upcoming conferences. Let me explain to you why this has been here for the last 10 years. This particular one about technology, we just added it this year. The reason it's added is because we did our reader surveys. Let me circle back and explain a little bit more about that. You want to bring it to life. If you have a 12-month calendar, every one of those deserves and has earned a reason why that is your focus, and you want to explain that to advertisers. It's part of your USP and part of what sets you apart. Any comment or observation on that, Jed, from your experience?
Well, I mean, you know, only sort of the obvious one that, you know, that calendar should really impact the creative message that the advertiser's using, you know, because it really it should, you know, it should almost mirror what the content is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the editorial.
Absolutely, and that really is the key piece on that. Let's add another point here. Do a bio on your editorial team. Who are those that are writing for you? Where do they go to school? What designations? What certifications? What awards and recognition? What if, you know, who's on your team? And you pause and go, never even thought about that. There are a writing team. No, they're part of your story. But if you just breeze through, go, oh, yeah, we got great writers. Oh, yeah, you love editorial. No, that's not really the case. You want to be showcasing those who write, those that have industry experience, and what is it that they're bringing that sets them apart. So I am a big believer in having a bio on your editorial team. I'm also a believer in keeping track of where our articles have been reposted, retweeted, and repurposed. For example, we've got a client, Jed, where we've done some work for them on their marketing side. There were some articles that were written over the last 90 days. Wall Street Journal picked one of them up. Yahoo News, ESPN picked up another. Holy smokes. Unbelievable exposure and visibility for that. So keeping track of where those go, our salespeople want to have that. That's a tool for those of you that are our sales leaders on this call. That is a tool that you have to supply behind the scenes. And you should be able to supply that so that the salespeople can go out and say, wow, not only are we being recognized, but let me show you the 22 sites where we were picked up. Let me show you where our news hit and went across the wire and got picked up by these 200 papers around the world or these 40 blogs. Let me tell you a little bit about, you know, the velocity of where this is going. And so the bottom line is that, again, with the power of electronic communication and as fast as it's moving, you want to be able to share with those your advertisers and your prospective advertisers the kind of recognition. Speaking of that, how about editorial awards? Okay, for those of you that have been on our program for the last 14 years, I live in Park City, Utah, where the Olympics were. 2002, beautiful ski resort, have a little community paper, is about, 6,000 that live in town and about 20,000 in the entire area. I love reading my community newspaper, passionately, cover to cover. Okay, and you know what the part that I love? They're constantly getting awards and recognition. How do I know that? Because they include it. They show me pictures of them receiving awards. They write up a story about themselves being recognized by the press, by the media. They talk about their stories that were recognized in a national and global award events. So, you know, how do I know that? Because I read it because they use their own print, the power of putting something in print, and they showcase it to me as a reader. All right? So think about that piece. That is often not done with media and publications, and that recognition doesn't come, and therefore you're not able to showcase that. And then let's go back around. Those are also things that we can repurpose, put on our Facebook, tie into our LinkedIn, put on our e-newsletter, put on our website. Okay? It goes back and forth. If you shout from the highest mountain, you will be heard. If you whisper in the winds, you will not. Very important distinction related to editorial. Okay? Lastly, bring editorial with you. include them in key meetings. Bring them in person to meetings. Involve them when you're out at industry shows and conventions and events. Tie them in on three-way conference calls or webinars. They don't have to be there for your entire sales presentation, but it's nice to have your director of editorial. It's nice to have your VP of editorial content that joins for the purpose of being the spokesperson for that portion. And because so few publication leaders do this, it's really uncommon. Because it's uncommon, it's memorable. The advertisers appreciate it. Again, we're not crossing over or influencing or impacting the editorial side, but we're letting the advertisers know that, A, they're important, and, B, there might be an industry trend or something happening in the space that we do want their point of view and their perspective. Okay? So editorial has the ability to help us drive advertising. Editorial has the opportunity to set us apart, but it's only as good as we put a spotlight. We've talked about doing this for distribution and circulation. We've talked about doing this for our ad results and the success. We've done programs just talking about recommendations and testimonials. There's so many ways you have to win and succeed. Always remember, as a media publication, website, newspaper, magazine, publication, e-news, whatever we're talking about in our advertising media umbrella, you are like Switzerland. You are at a place of authority. You are a thought leader. You can go ask the tough questions. You can go gain the data and bring that in and compile it and take chaos and create clarity. That's a really powerful, compelling space, and it's immensely powerful, but it's only as good as we showcase it on the sales and selling side. It's only as good as our advertisers understand it, because that creates advertising loyalty. It's only as good as our prospects are seeing our monthly e-newsletter or coming to our educational webinars just like this and learning about the things that we do separate and unique, learning about the sector. The easiest way to sell advertising to your prospects is to educate them. The easiest way. Every single month, your prospective advertisers need to and must be getting an e-newsletter about your space, the sector, trends, products, services, what your take on the world is, and should be invited to an educational webinar every 30 days so they can either read what you have to say about their sector and their world and their business, or they can come to an educational program, just like all of you are joining us here today. Let them come in by land, sea, or air. It doesn't matter. Let them see the authoritative voice you have. Let them see how close you are connected to the sector, the industry, the space, the niche, right there. But you can only do it if you do that on a consistent basis. In the same way that we say, the power of advertising is to advertise, and the power of advertising is to do it on a continual, repetitive basis. Guess what? We have to do the same. We have got to educate on a consistent basis every 30 days. And since 1995, 193 months later, every month, you can come listen to an educational program done by myself, and since 2006, in conjunction with Jed and the wonderful team of MediaBits. We drink our own Kool-Aid. We don't just talk about it, we do it every single month. You need to do the same. It's an opportunity. You'll set yourself apart, and you'll outrun, and you'll outsell your competitors.
Jeff. Ernest, you would advocate putting prospective advertisers on a mailing list to receive the publication every week or month or whenever it comes out.
You know, that's probably the lowest hanging fruit, probably the easiest to do. But if I had, 100 prospects that I want to sell my, Jell-O magazine advertising to,
right.
Yeah, every single one of them would get that. But I would do so much more.
Right.
I want them to see my e-newsletter specifically tailored, for advertisers. I want to invite them to an educational program much like this. Probably once a quarter, if I was working in a geographical area, I'd invite them to something. If we were going to industry shows, I would look for opportunities to meet them in industry shows. Again, land, sea, and air. There's so many ways that I would want to engage, but always coming from the side of education. Not, hi, it's Ernest. Hey, anybody want to buy an ad? I hate that approach. I probably spent the first 3 or 4 years of selling advertising. That's all I ever did until I stopped and realized that I was trying to sell ads, you know, with a hammer. The more I used a feather, the more the bees came to my honey, and I sold more pages than I could ever imagine. My team sold more pages, and I learned how to come through the back door, and advertisers were handing me advertising agreements rather than me have to use a hammer and beg, grovel, or hope I was going to get an ad. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, it makes sense. What do you do if you're trying to sell to an advertiser who isn't specifically in the niche that you're focused on? So, for example, if you think that you think that a car dealer may make sense for your plumbing, your plumbing magazine, right?
Right.
Plumbers
right.
buy cars, mm-hmm. but perhaps the car dealership mm-hmm. isn't as interested in hearing about how plumbers are doing.
Sure. It's a valid point. When you think about advertisers, those who are directly in the plumbing sector that want to sell products or services directly to plumbers, always make certain you have a commanding percent of the market share there first before you go get what I call out of sector or more ancillary, related, like you're using in this example. If I have a plumber magazine, I'm going to have, plungers and toilets and tools and all the things that plumbers buy, and that's easy because I know my audience. But when you say automotive for plumbers, I'm going to have to do a really good selling presentation about why plumbers. I'm going to have to tie in how we've done surveys that plumbers buy new trucks every 6 months, whereas most people buy new trucks every 24 months. So I'm going to focus on the trucks because that's what plumbers need rather than cars. I'm going to show them from the reader survey what else that we know about how they select. I might even do a specific survey about how they select trucks and truck dealers. So you have to really tailor. What I'm really sort of saying is you have to work harder for kind of the out-of-sector advertisers in order to get them, and frankly, you may not get them at all, because it's just a little tougher to sell. Okay? Let's see. There's a question in from Aaron. Let's field one more quick question before we pause. Only 3 days left this month, and I'm running a special promotion, annual job posting slots. You ever considered posting as a monster? Now is a good time to talk. Would it make sense to get some postings up and running for you? Gosh. Aaron, I'm not quite clear what your question is. So, Aaron, you know what? We'll take that one offline. Reading your question, and I like it, but you have to put it in the form of a question, and I'll come back and answer it by email.
It's like Jeopardy. We do not acknowledge questions that do not have a form of a question.
I was rolling on going, I'm not certain I understand, but Aaron, maybe you'll clarify that before we wrap up. Jed, how about some closing words to our group as we wrap up our program here today, please?
Well, thanks everyone for joining us, and again, thanks Ernest. As illustrated in this in the last hour, Ernest has an enormous amount of knowledge related to all things publishing. I'm from MediaBids, and our contact information will be in the follow-up email. So please feel free to reach out to us to learn more, or to learn if you're already using us, learn how to do more with it. We appreciate your time and thanks for attending.
Absolutely. And thank you to all of you. If there are upcoming topics that you would like us to address in one of our upcoming programs, please let us know. There's more than 50-plus hours at MediaBids that you can go listen to prior programs. We encourage you to do so. Please let us know, though, what trends you would like to hear about, what topics. Jed and myself will be meeting over the next couple of days, planning next month. And as always, please take the time to circle back to MediaBids.com. They have a wealth of information. They will help you succeed. They have a lot of resources. They have data like you cannot believe about what works best in publications of all kinds, and they will help you drive extra revenue that you were not anticipating. So, Jed, as always, an absolute pleasure to all of you. Make it a wonderful day, and we'll certainly be in touch going forward, okay?
Great. Thanks very much, Ernest.
Take care, Jed.
Thanks for joining us.
Uh-huh.
Bye. Bye-bye.